folks. You're listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman in beautiful Charlottesville, Virginia. We're the podcast where you can hear from fabulous food personalities, people who are successful, chefs, winemakers, cheesemakers, whoever. You can find out really what makes them tick, what's really in their heart, who are they for real, why do they do what they do. So you're listening on Seville Podcast. You can also find us on chewfat.net. And tonight we're really excited to have someone who we think's pretty cool. She was on Hell's Kitchen, for those of you who love Hell's Kitchen. And this is one of those shows that gives chefs sometimes a good name and sometimes a bad name. But I think the truth is we probably do yell and cuss like that anyway. So I kind of like people thinking that's the way it is in the kitchen. And anyway, so we have Andrea Heinle. She's from Reading, Pennsylvania. Works as the sous chef at Stokes A Castle. I've eaten there before. And Andrea, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you, Chef?
I'm doing great. And so tell me just real quick, Stokes A Castle is kind of a historic restaurant, right? You give me a really quick bio of that particular restaurant.
Yeah, the castle was built back in the 1940s, I believe, for the Heaster family. It was a vacation home, and it stayed that way for a while, and then they converted it into a restaurant. It sold and then converted into a restaurant, I guess, around the 50s or so.
Mm-hmm.
It's been open as a commercial property ever since.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat place, and probably for that area, one of the nicest kind of special event restaurants. Got a lot of people doing, their 50th anniversaries and wedding anniversaries and business deal celebrations, like that.
Yeah, we see everything from bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs and sweet 16s and weddings and funerals and everything in between. It's just, if there's a reason to party and more available, they have it there. So
that's awesome. And you, Your quick bio, I know that you went to the Culinary Institute of America,
mm-hmm.
Hyde Park, New York, my school, and mm-hmm. proud of it.
Absolutely.
And tell me real quick, what did you do before you went to the Culinary Institute of America?
Well, a little of everything. I was just trying to find my way. I didn't go to the CIA until I was 26 years old. I got out of high school, and I just worked odd jobs, and I knew I wanted to go to college, and I knew I wanted an education. I just didn't know what exactly for, and I didn't want to spend money throwing it at some degree
mm-hmm.
that I would never use. So I waited.
Yeah, sure.
And I was in real estate and manufactured housing sales
right.
when I finally decided to go to CIA.
That's awesome. So let me ask you a question. So you're in manufactured housing sales. You're mm-hmm. sitting there. You're selling a house. And all of a sudden you're like, you know what? I'm going to go to chef school. Is that how it happened?
No. Actually, the story is a lot deeper than that. My my grandmother on my mother's side mm-hmm. She never called herself a chef. She called herself a cook.
Right.
And she was a cook all her life, and when I was in my 20s, I moved back to Pennsylvania, and she would always invite me over to, teach me how to make her chicken rivel soup or,
sure.
Whatever else it is she was making. And, I was into running the streets, and I always canceled on her, and I always said, we'll do it next week, Blue Mom, and that's what the family calls her, Blue Mom.
Mm-hmm.
And, I tell her, I'll be over next week, Blue, no big deal. And then she died. And I was 24 or so, 25
sure.
when she passed away. And I just felt so horrible that, I had all these opportunities to spend time with my grandmother when she was here. And I
right.
never really learned that life lesson
mm-hmm.
that people are only here for a finite time. And when she passed away, I applied to the CIA to fulfill her legacy.
Right.
And just to kind of come to peace with the fact that I mistreated our relationship when she was alive, and I just wanted to make it up to her.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I had no idea what it was like to be a chef. I had no idea what that meant. I had no idea any of that. I just knew I wanted to learn how to cook.
Well, let me ask you a question. So did you have any experience before you got to school?
No. No, I actually had that 1 year. It was a required 1 year experience in the industry.
Right.
And I quit my job and I moved back in with my family. I got rid of my apartment, got rid of my furniture, got rid of everything that I'd worked so hard for. In my sure. late teens and early 20s, just gave it all up, moved back into my house, simplified, and I started working at a restaurant for something like, I don't know, $8 an hour probably.
Wow, you got paid good.
Right. For having no experience, I see that now.
Yeah.
And I got a year experience at a local restaurant here, and off to school I went, and had no idea what I was in for. Absolutely none.
So how was that? How was that first, first couple weeks at the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America, Mecca for chef schools?
It was just a whirlwind. I mean, that place, you know, chef, eat, breathe, and sleep food. It's all food. I mean, normal college campuses, you go around, and I don't know what people talk about, but anywhere you go on CIA, everybody's talking about food, no matter what.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that much. I was one of those students. I was what they called the non-traditional student, which means you're old, really.
Yeah.
And
no, you're not
old.
I had
no idea.
I'm old. Yeah.
Well, when I was in class with these kids that are fresh out of high school and, 18, 19 years old, and here I am, 26. I felt old at that time.
Yeah.
In retrospect.
Sure.
Not, but,
well, you were like 8 years older than some of those.
Yeah. But then again, I had some people in my class that were 62. So, there was a whole range of people. But it was just intense. It was so incredibly intense, and it was so overwhelming, and I knew I made the right decision, and it was a great transition.
Yeah. So listen, I'm trying to picture this because, here's a person who really doesn't have that much experience in the kitchen, decided to do this, and you hit the Culinary Institute, and then you have a pretty structured and disciplined education. No talking back. Things like at college, everyone's kind of laid back. Hey, today I'm not going to class because I got 800 people in my class, whatever. But at CIA, what happens if you don't go to class?
You're done.
Yeah.
I mean, you only have a couple weeks to nail the block, and then you move on to the next. If you miss one class, you're so far behind at that point. But I did come from a military background. My grandfather was a retired Army chef, and my mom was in the military for 10 years. So, I was definitely familiar. I was in JROTC in high school, and so I was familiar with the discipline, and I was familiar with the yes, chef aspect. Don't talk back, you don't question your superior, you just do what they say no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't quite so shocking for me. So
you were ready for it. I mean, that's a cool thing. So in your childhood, you grew up with these people and they had this military background. Was there any, you didn't even have an inkling you wanted to do this until you were in your, like 24, 25. So before that, as growing up, there wasn't anything ever you were like, man, I make cakes in my Easy Bake oven.
Well, it's funny. I didn't really connect the dots until I went to culinary school, and I think I killed my Easy Bake oven. I actually used to catch snails in the yard. We had a lot of snails. I was living in California, and I used to sneak out Del Monte canned peas and salt. And I used to put salt on the snails, which would make them bubble, which I thought was really cool. And then they'd come out of their shells. And then I'd start smashing the peas and the snails together, and I would make snail cakes right there
on the sidewalk.
I was very innovative at five. I just didn't know it.
Now, did you pick some of this snail cake up and try to eat it?
No.
That would have been.
Nowadays, I probably would, but... Back then, no.
You might have been onto something. You might have to try that. snail cake thing. You know, get a mortar and pestle, and you know, you smash that thing up with the peas and fry them. You know,
you might
come up with something that's distinctly yours.
You know what? I'm going to have to try it now.
Yeah, you should. I did see some some pictures of some of your current food on your Facebook. It looks really nice, very refined, and everything. So. So then you had the childhood and your family, and your grandmother was a huge influence, which is really cool that you went out and said, look, I'm going to fulfill her legacy. So here you are, you're out there. And how do you feel about that decision today?
It was meant to be. I really feel like she has blessed me in so many ways because I decided to do that, you know. And the way it all went down is, you know, I was watching TV and I walked by this commercial after my grandmother passed away, and I saw this commercial on cooking, like some cooking school, like Cordon Bleu or something.
Yeah.
And I said to my mom, I said, hey, Mom, what do you think about me going to chef school? And she said, your grandmother always wanted to go to the CIA. And I was like, well, that's it. That's where I'm going. I had never even seen the campus, never even knew what it was about. I couldn't find it online or researching it.
Yeah.
And little did I know that it was pretty expensive. But at that point, my mind was made up, and failure wasn't an option. And it's just been giving me reward after reward ever since I made that decision. So I have no regrets. Absolutely not.
Yeah. So then you went to school. What was who were some of your favorite teachers and why? I mean, what were the anybody that kind of stuck out that really did something that made you kind of think things a different way?
I think, you know, that's a difficult question because they all, I don't know, I just took everything in, and every chef taught me something different, and I can, you know, I catch myself saying things that they would say, or I mean, I don't know that there's one in particular. I'm still friends with a couple of my chef instructors that, were my instructors at the time. I still keep in touch with them, and I'm constantly in contact with the school as far as, you know, continuing, you know, help with anything I need. You know, all I have to do is make a phone call and they're there. So,
right.
I mean, it's just an amazing school.
How about a favorite class?
Ooh, wines.
Yeah, there you go. Wines class. So that was one of my favorite classes looking back.
It was awesome. Man, that was such a great class. And I was so pissed off because I had, right before that class, I went hiking on the Appalachian Trail, and I contracted Lyme's disease. So I was in this class, and I was falling asleep. I was mad. I was like, God, I've waited 2 years for this class, and I can't stay awake, and I couldn't figure out why. And then the school nurse finally figured it out, and I was just like, okay, if I have to stand up in this class, I will. And there were times where I had to actually stand up so I wouldn't fall asleep in that class. So.
Yeah. So I remember Wine's class. I had this instructor, and he used to slick his hair back, and he was real white and pale. I cannot remember his name. And we were in this room that looked like, I don't know if this is still there, because, you know, I never went back to CIA. I graduated February 17th, 1978, and I have never been back. But this room was like a chapel. And so it was kind of medieval looking, and then there was this guy, you know, in his black clothes with his hair slicked back, and he was all white and eerie. And what I remember is one day the electricity went off, and he got out a candle, and he held it like up under his face his hand, and he's talking to us. His like face was glowing, and it was like we were with Dracula. And, of course, we were a little buzzed because, I mean, and I was only, I think I was 18 only. And, you know, we were tasting wine, and I would down my wine, you know. That was, and
I think we all did.
Yeah, that was a great class. Now, did you have mixology?
No, we did not.
Oh, you missed out on that, man. Mixology was something else.
I bet.
Tasting gimlets and stuff like that. But
we did have a class called Advanced Cooking, and it was later on down the line, and you would get to create your own menus, and somehow we always incorporated alcoholic shots in these menus.
So. Just like a chef school, you know?
Yeah.
Some way.
This was our 10 o'clock in the morning class. By 12:30, everybody was back in the dorm sleeping.
Yeah, true enough. True enough. Yeah. So you're at the CIA, and of course, you took your externship with me at the hotel school at Statler Hotel. That was kind of cool, right?
Yeah, it was.
Good
times.
You know what I remember about that is when we put that sushi thing in the
the bar. Martini night, yeah.
And I think the cool thing about that sushi night was the fact that it was all grad students, not undergrads. And, of course, the grad students at Cornell, a lot of them are Asian, so they know about sushi. So we were under a lot of pressure to make sure this was good, because if it wasn't, we would have been the laughing stock of the university. But we but we pulled it off, and it ended up being a really cool thing. And I think you did a really great job.
Thanks. Yeah.
Picking that up, because that's not the easiest thing to make, because you can really, really mess that whole thing up. And I think I think it went real well. And I remember that. Is there anything you remember about your externship? That
walking through a whiteout snowstorm, getting lost, and I thought I would wake up like The Shining the next day, just frozen in the snow. I was so scared. But then that whole experience was just so amazing. It was a beautiful campus. There was just so many different things going on with what you did as far as revamping their food program. And I remember the first time you told me that I needed to make soup, and you pointed me to this huge steam kettle, and I was like, how do you even begin making that much soup? I don't even know.
Yeah.
And I remember us evaluating it, and I'm looking at him like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Still a student. I don't know what to do. But you liked it, and you know, we fixed it and tweaked it, and that whole experience was just so amazing. And that whole sushi experience, as a matter of fact, I made sushi probably about 3 weeks ago, and I didn't pull that card out of my back pocket until then, when we were in a pinch. And I did have a line cook for the past year and a half that did all the sushi work and everything, and I never let on to anybody that I actually knew how to make it, because then they would expect me to do it all the time.
Yeah, right. And it can
so
be
then I made it, and everybody's like, wow, chef, I didn't know you knew how to do that. I'm like, yeah, well, don't tell everybody. But yeah, I still to this day, take care of that and get the opportunity to make sushi. And I have you to thank, and I remember we tried to make rice in the one medium-sized steam kettle, and the steam wasn't going around it evenly, and parts of the rice were mushy, and parts of it were, that was such a mess.
Yeah. You know, the rice, that's the key. The rice is the key, because the rice has to be perfect.
Every time I make it, I hear you say that.
Yeah. You can't serve a mushy rice. You got to be able to see every kernel of rice when you cut that thing. So anyway, so after you went back to school, you graduated. What did you do? I don't know. I don't know what you did. What did you do when you got out of school? Where did you go?
Well, I had to move back home, back to Pennsylvania. My plans that I had graduating fell through, and they did not happen. And I moved back to Pennsylvania and moved back in with my mother. And I'm like, geez, OP, I'm never going to get away from my family, and I have no idea what I'm doing. And I had no idea what direction I was taking, and I was working at a local tavern.
Right.
Just doing crap food and nothing that I wanted to be doing after getting a bachelor's degree at the CIA, that's for sure. Right. And I got sent home early from that job one day, and then I got home and I hopped on the internet, and I was just waiting for it to predict my future for me like I did back then. And I went on my CIA website for job recruiting for entry-level jobs, and the first thing that popped up was now casting Hell's Kitchen. I was like, well, what the hell? I'm going to give him a call, whatever. So I called the number, and the casting agent picked up the phone, actually picked up the phone, and I thought, oh God, here we go. And she immediately put me under a stress interview.
Nice.
And she wanted to get a rise out of me, and the questions that she asked me were just pushing buttons, and I wound up yelling at her. I was so mad by the time we got off the phone, and she's like, great, I want you to come to New York. I'm like, what? Shut up. I don't like you. I don't ever want to meet you. So I wound up going up to New York, and it just, the whole thing rolled out, and the next thing I know, I'm standing in on the set of Hell's Kitchen making my signature dish, and you know, Ramsay's towering over me, and I'm, you know, thinking, what the hell did I just do? I committed career suicide. So
yeah,
that's what happened immediately after graduation.
Yeah, but you didn't think that your first day. You didn't sit there on Hell's Kitchen saying, I just committed career suicide.
Yes, I did.
Did you really? On the first day?
Yes, I did.
You were already worried about that?
Well, yeah, I was, because you just never know. You know, I was never a fan of the show. As a matter of fact, it was a train wreck, and I would every now and then, I never watched TV.
And there you were. It's a train wreck.
And
you're on the show.
I'm right there, and I'm like, what did I just do? You know, and the whole thing just rolled out so quickly that I didn't really get a chance to just sit down and say, okay, is this a smart move? Is this something that I want to do? Is it a wise career move? And the next thing I know, I'm there. And,
yeah.
You know, they originally wanted, they said they wanted to cast me for season 4, and then they called me and said, no, you know, we have who we need for season 4, but we definitely want to keep you into consideration for season 5. And I'm like, yeah, you know, whatever, just whatever. And next thing I know, I'm getting a phone call saying, hey, we need to fly you out in 2 days. And I'm like, okay, well, not really doing much of anything else right now,
yeah.
So yeah, I'd only watched a few episodes. I never watched a complete season. I never followed the show religiously. And the next thing I know, I'm there, and you know, just kind of looking around, shell shocked, like, what did I just do?
Yeah, that's funny. So you're thinking that the first day, how did the whole thing play out? Did you work with Ramsay a lot, or did you only see him on certain days?
No, we rarely saw him. We would see him in the morning. We would do lineup in the morning, and we would see him sometimes in the morning, sometimes we wouldn't, and then we would see him during dinner service, and dinner service was every night to every other night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people see on television, they see 20 minutes of dinner service, you know.
Right.
Whereas by the time it's over, we've been going through 5 hours of pure hell. And, you know,
that's why it's called Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, over and over and over. And, you know, that situation that I went through was more stressful on me than my divorce.
Yeah.
I swear to you, it was the worst thing I ever went through in my adult life. And it really is. And
yeah.
And it's hard. And, you know, the public only sees so little of what really, really happens. And you know, the editors just make you out to be whoever they want you to be, and
sure.
You just kind of have to roll with it, because at that point you've signed your life away.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that you can do about it.
So how do you feel? Did you watch yourself? Did you watch the season?
Oh yeah.
So
oh,
how
yeah,
did you feel
really?
After you watched it? How did you feel about yourself? Did you feel like, God, that's not me? Or how did you feel? What did you say?
Well, there were definitely there were times where I was like, yeah, I said that, but I didn't say it about that situation. I said it about that bitch.
Yeah.
Like, you guys got it mixed up. Get it right.
Yeah, yeah.
And there were times where, you know, there were times where I would make things, and I was fresh out of culinary school. I didn't really think inside the box. I was experimenting. And I remember one time I made something. I made, we got King Crab, I think, that they gave us, yeah. And we had to make something. Well, I made a pear sauce, and I crusted it in macadamia nuts, I think.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Well, they edited it to say that, and he said it was absolutely disgusting on TV. And I was like, bullshit, he loved it. He actually was surprised, and he's like, wow, that's really good. But then they show it to the general public, and then they edit it to make it look like he didn't like it, and those were the things that bothered me, the things that, you know, I created food and he liked it, but then they, you know, as far as like all the other personal stuff, as far as not getting along with people and all the that sort of stuff, I could care less about, you know, because people get along, people don't get along.
So what about the cast? Did you guys actually live together or did you not live
together? Yeah.
So you lived together with this cast?
Yeah.
Boy, that must have been something.
It was difficult. I had to fight for my first cup of coffee every morning. So.
Yeah, that's no fun. You didn't have it like, look, I'll be up at this time, make my coffee, have it ready.
No. You're completely sequestered. You have no cell phone, no money, no, they take your identification away. No internet, no TV, no newspapers, no books, no contact with your family.
Wow.
You are completely in an isolation bubble for I was there for upwards of almost 50 days, I guess.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and they, you know, if you had to communicate with your family, the producers would come to you and say, is there anything you need to tell your family? And, you know, I had a garden at the time, a huge garden. And I was like, yeah, tell my mom to harvest the carrots. It's time. And they looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about? But that's how it was.
Wow. Well, I was proud. I think I told you this when I talked to you last week, that you didn't cry. He never made you cry.
No, he never made me cry.
No, you know, you were mad. You could see it in your face, but he never made you cry. But then you'd have these big dudes, you know, and they'd be crying. He'd be like, what are you doing? He's like, well, my father used to yell at me like this, and they'd be crying and stuff. And,
yeah.
And I think I saw an episode where you burnt something in the oven. Well, you know, I figured they probably turned the oven up on you, you know, when you weren't looking. But then you tried to hide it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was awesome. And then he comes flying over and he like looks right where you hit it. What is that? You just, your face was like, oh, that was fantastic. You should have just said, I don't know where that came from. You know, I mean, if you could go back,
it would have been classic.
Look, if you could go back, wouldn't you mess around a little more? You'd be like, chef,
definitely.
I have no clue. That is ridiculous. I think Jimmy did that or whatever, you know.
Knowing what I know now, oh God, it would be a totally different story.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I don't know what you're talking about, Chef.
That wasn't there before. I think one of my competitors. Of course, they would show it. They would show it like 100 times of you taking it out, looking left, looking right, and shoving it in there.
Yeah, they would have. They would have.
But I don't think you looked bad. I don't think you looked bad. I think a lot of other people on the show looked really bad. And look, you ended up looking tough and you made some good food. So, you know, so when you were done with that, when the show's over, like they kick you out, you were third? Were you third in that show?
Yeah, third place. I prefer second runner up. It sounds better.
Second. You were second runner up. So anyway, they kick you out and then you walk out of there. What do? You walk out and you're like, you just like walk out in the street and they have all your shit there and they're like, see you later, buddy.
No, you sit in a chair for about 45 minutes and I just sat in this chair and waited for the first and second place contestant to finish filming in the studio.
Right.
And they take you to do your walk of shame down the smoky hallway. You know, and then not only do you do the walk of shame once, but you have to go back because apparently you didn't walk right the first time. So then you do it a second time and you're like, gosh, come on, man. And then they take you outside and it's freezing out there and you're just drenched in sweat from dinner service. And I was so freaking happy to be gone. At that point, And if you watch it, my exit interview outside in the starry sky, they're like, but weren't you mad? Didn't you want to stay? And I'm like, no, man, I'm happy. they just kept trying to drill me and get me to just be this
in
with everything else.
Yeah, but we as watchers of reality TV, we like when people snap.
Oh, absolutely.
We're waiting for people like Jen snapped on Top Chef All-Stars. I don't know if you saw it, but Jen, you know, she's the big time chef de cuisine for Eric Repair and all this kind of stuff.
Really.
And she snapped when they kicked her off. And she told the judges to, you know, F off. And then she laughed and she said, this is bull crap. I'm the greatest, you know, that kind of thing. And,
oh,
you know,
God.
You love that stuff. She looked terrible. I mean, it was horrible. It was really bad. But and I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, snap, you know. So, so you know, we're all waiting for people to snap. So they wanted you to snap and you didn't. So I think that's cool. You held tight.
They were trying. I was just happy I was going to sleep in a queen-size bed and have a full-size shower that night.
That's awesome. Well, then, so then you leave, you go back home, and then what? Because you probably, I mean, well, you didn't have a job, right? At that point, you were looking for jobs.
Nope.
So did that help
you? I come back home.
Did it ruin your career?
No, not at all.
All right.
Not at all. I came back home and I thought to myself, all right, after people view that on television, at that point I had no idea when it was going to air.
Sure.
And the writer's strike, the Writers Guild or whatever for television was on strike at that time. And they were like, oh, I think it's going to air sooner than it's supposed to. Oh, we're not sure. Well, we waited an entire year after we filmed.
Right.
So I had to be quiet for a year, which for me, as you know, is very difficult. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take this time to go and go to a really great restaurant that can really solidify my education. Because, I mean, let's face it, I'm 28 or whatever at the time. No.
Old as dirt.
31 or 32 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's old in the grand scheme of things in this industry.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
There are people that get in this industry when they're 14, 15 years old and work their way up. Well, here I am. I just got a 4-year degree. I have 1 year of real experience under my belt and then another year of working at a craft job. And I said, I need real experience. and I need to put myself on the fast track right now. So I moved up. I came back home. I packed my bags and I moved out to Vegas in 2 weeks' time.
Sure.
And I wound up getting a job working for, am I allowed to say names, I guess?
Yeah, you can say anybody you want.
I wound up getting a job with a restaurant that Danielle Ballou had out in Vegas. It's now closed. And I worked there for a year.
Sure.
And while I was there, I learned as much as I possibly could. I wasn't the best line cook. I'll be the first to admit that because I didn't have much experience going into it. But I got my ass kicked, and
good.
There were many nights where I went home crying. I wouldn't cry in the kitchen, but I'll tell you what, as soon as I stepped out of that building, the tears were flowing.
So this was a Danny Ballou restaurant. Was it French? Yep. Was it a bistro? Was it more fine dining?
It was a bistro. It was a bistro, but we had a Michelin star.
Uh-huh.
So it was, you know, more on the rustic side as far as the style of the French cooking, but we were still, you know, putting out really, really nice food.
Who,
and we were doing
who was
high
the chef
volume.
De cuisine?
Wes Holton.
Mm-hmm. That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, he just,
Was he mean? Was he good and mean?
Not typically, but when he did ride me, he definitely rode me like I was a donkey. I mean, there were times where I was like, what do you want from me? I'm moving as fast as I can, you know, and that kind of cooking, you know, you work in a place like that for a year and you're going to learn a lot.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and I took that time and took advantage of it. And I just, really learned to refine technique and, just plating and visual and flavor and just really appreciating product. And, I worked my way through most of the kitchen. And then I, right before the show aired, the time came where it was finally going to come out, and I thought, you know what, this is going to be difficult. I want to experience this whole reality show thing with my family, and I moved back home.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I went through Hell's Kitchen. I went through a year of Vegas, and I thought, I need to get out of the kitchen. I need to get out for now, and I wound up doing food sales, and that was just horrible.
You did food sales?
Yeah.
Wow.
I wound up getting a job with I thought, you know what, I want a 9-to-5, I want stability, and I want, you know, I just want to have a normal life. And I get this job for a major food distributor, and it just, it was horrible. It was just horrible. And I lasted 6 months.
Yeah. Well, you know, just so you know, I don't treat my salespeople real well from those places. So, in fact, I just took a video today of my salesman from one of the major food companies trying to sell me ketchup in a little dipping packet. I was going to put it on Facebook. Because he's holding the two little things and he's saying, these are going to save you money in the long run. And I'm just looking at him like, are you serious? But
you're such an idiot.
Actually, I might buy them anyway. So you tried that wasn't for you. So then when you're like, okay, maybe the kitchen is good. I like it. So did it kind of solidify to you like, all right, fine. I do like the kitchen. I want the hours. I want to be. Is that what happened? You were sitting there getting yelled.
That's
were
not
you
get, what happened.
Hey, were you getting yelled at by chefs? They were coming in there, and you're like,
no. So I land this account, and this account's called Stokesay Castle.
Oh, there you go.
And they're like, here, newbie, take this new account that's not opened yet. I want you to, because I had all this free time. I didn't have a book of business built up.
Sure, yeah.
And they're like, look, you have all this spare time. It's a 6-minute drive from your house. I want you to go there. I want you to count. You know, they had been closed down for 3 years.
Okay.
The castle.
Uh-huh.
And there was a consulting chef there, and he's, you know, the company is like, look, we're going to be the main food distributor there. I want you to go and help them price out recipes. I want you to go do food costs with them. I want you to help them write menus. I want you to do whatever it is you need to do to get this count. So I wind up in this old dingy garage counting silverware that looks like it was donated from the Salvation Army that had rat poop all over it. You know, you have 372 rat poop forks.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell am I doing here? And so the time finally came where the opening order comes. I get them their food, and then they have no real kitchen staff. And I said, well, I'm going to be a great salesperson and help them out in the kitchen because I kind of know what I'm doing in the kitchen,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
So I throw on my chef whites and I say, I'm here to help. And then I walk in and there's no running water. There's no electricity. So I wind up cooking like 60 pounds of pasta, wheeling water from the general manager's house that's like 300 yards away on a little wheelie cart. Cooking by candlelight, and I'm thinking, what? This is insane. This is totally insane. And I did such a good job that they gave me a sous chef position. They were like, look, we really want you to be part of our team. What is it going to take to get you here? And I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to throw a number at you that's so absurd. And just
don't forget, they might listen to this now.
Yeah, well, they...
Meaning, hey, it was so absurdly low. Say that.
It was so absurdly low.
That I can't believe I even said yes.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Well, now they make me earn it. Let me tell you what. But I just threw a number out there, and they said yes. And I guess the rest, you know, I'm here.
Yeah.
That's what brought me to today.
So now how long have you been working there, Stokesay?
Well, I was their sales rep for about 6 months, and then I, before they even opened, and then I've been a sous chef, which is more of a chef de cuisine position, because I do write the menus and recipes and things like that, and that's been about a year and a half now, a little over a year and a half. So I've been there for about 2 years.
Well, cool. So
yeah.
What did you find harder, opening a restaurant or being on Hell's Kitchen?
Oh, God. Hell's Kitchen. Easy.
Yeah, well, see, then that is really then a good, you know, it's a good experience for you to go through. Because going through that probably made opening that kitchen a lot easier, but a lot of people fold opening restaurants.
Really?
A lot of people do. A lot of people don't make it through, and, you know, hotel companies like Ritz-Carlton and stuff, they have teams that go just open restaurants because you have to have the right mentality to make it through, and the stress that it takes and the things you have to do to get open. A lot of people fold. So obviously
I guess it was kind of a primer because, you know, I was there I was there for a short of 2 months on set, and you don't get a day off. You don't get time to relax. And the same thing happened opening up this restaurant.
Sure.
I mean, I was working 26 days straight, you know, 10, 12, 14-hour days easily, day after day after day without a day off. So you're absolutely right about
yeah.
that. That was definitely kind of the prequel to what was about to happen.
Yeah, true. So let's ask you real quick. Now, you fulfilling your grandmother's destiny, you've had a pretty cool little career. Are you hoping to stay, you know, doing the thing for other restaurants, or would you like to do your own thing one day?
I think we had this conversation the other day, mm-hmm. and I do want to do my own thing. I feel like I'm definitely at that point in my career where I just want to call my own shots and be my own person, but I don't think I want it to be in the restaurant setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I touched on this with you as well,
yeah.
is that, you know, the higher up you get in a kitchen as far as your responsibility goes, sous chef, chef de cuisine, junior sous chef, executive chef, the less cooking
mm-hmm.
that's involved, because you have so many other responsibilities as far as scheduling, as far as training, as far as ordering, as far as receiving, and just making sure equipment works. And
yeah.
I mean, there's just a slew of responsibility that, you know, people don't really see. Keeping track of food costs, making sure you're making money, you know, it's just endless.
Yeah.
And when
taking
you
care of all the crazy things that the employees have problems with.
Oh, my God. When people cry, I just want to, like, scream, like, just really shut the fuck
Did
up.
Did you see me cry
bad.
On Hell's Kitchen? That's what you should say. Did you see me cry?
I
might have made you cry, though.
What's that?
I think I might have made you cry.
No, you didn't. No,
I'm
you
just
didn't.
Kidding. I'm just
no,
kidding.
No, no, no. Do you remember when I cut my finger to the bone?
Yeah.
I cut it to the bone. I was pitting an avocado.
Uh-huh.
And I came into the office, and I was holding my finger. And that finger's still numb to this day, by the way. And I was like, Chef, I cut myself. And you're like, really? Huh. Let's see. You wrapped it up, and then you just squeezed the hell out of my finger, and you looked at me with this menacing look, and you said, is it going to make you cry? And I'm like, no, Chef. And sure enough, I didn't cry, and you were like, wow, you're pretty tough. I was like, yes, Chef.
Look, I was really just trying to make sure it held together. That's all.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, that works. So what aspect would you like to do? I mean, your life goal. I mean, I think this is a really good experience, Stokesy Castle, the things you're doing there. You do lots of catering, plus you have the restaurant. So it's challenging you on how to manage and keep things straight. What kind of hours
yeah.
are you? What kind of hours are you working these days?
Slow week 50, busy week 80.
Mm-hmm.
Ish. You know, it's just whatever warrants, you know. You know, and it just goes by so fast, though, that you don't realize you're leaving early in the morning and coming back after the sun's gone down.
Yeah,
you know,
true. True. And you still like that?
I you know, sometimes I curse it, and sometimes I'm like, God, I just want to be laying out on my deck with a book. And
mm-hmm.
But the thing is the reality is I find that time. I have to find that time. Otherwise, I would go postal. You know, and there are times where I look at my executive chef and I'm like, can I please leave early tonight? I need
yeah.
4 hours to myself.
Yeah.
And he understands. And 4 hours is probably the greatest, like, gift that I could ever get that week.
Sure.
You know, and just any kind of found time is just amazing. And you just appreciate it so much more, I think.
Yeah,
and,
true.
You know,
true. So what would you... What would you say now, you know, now that you've been doing food, do you have your own kind of food philosophy or you know, you have something that when you're creating a menu that drives you, do you say, well, you know, I want everything to be, you know, everything's got to be organic, or, you know, I believe everything needs to be harmonizing, or what do you have? I mean, how do you think?
My philosophy is does it make me happy? I don't really care I shouldn't say I don't care about the whole local sustainable movement or the slow food movement, because I do.
Mm-hmm.
My big thing right now is genetically modified organisms and trying to create meat in test tubes and just things that are just so outrageous that just are so strange to me. But I don't stick to anything rigidly. I don't say no cream, no butter. I don't say, you know, it has to be organic. I don't say it has to be on the sustainable seafood list.
Sure.
I try to be conscious of all of those things all the time. And when I think when I pay attention to all those little things going on, as far as, you know, once you know that information and you know that it's not good for the environment and you know that you shouldn't be using that product,
mm-hmm.
you find a way to make it without it. And when I see the same menu for 3 months out of the year, 4 months out of the year, and I have to look at that same dish over and over again. And if I can look at that dish and say, I like this about it, I like that about it, it makes me happy, and this is the reason why, then I'm good with it. If it makes me happy and if it's something that
sure.
I am, you know, I know that came to me and I have an attachment to it, I can look at it for 4 months and not get tired of it.
Yeah, so true.
You know how it is. You have a seasonal menu.
Mm-hmm.
You see the same pork dish 79,000 times, and you have to make it the same 79,000 times. Well, what is it about that dish that you like?
Yeah,
well,
sure.
I dreamt about it one night, and that's why I'm serving it to this customer, but that customer doesn't know. You know, I dream about food all the time, and I look up in my flavor Bible, and I go to work, and I get the ingredients, and I try to make it, and I visualize my dreams, and that's what gets me going. That's what
yeah,
keeps
sure.
me going.
Yeah, if you can do that, then that's a fantastic thing. But don't forget that sometimes people like a dish, and they want to come back and have it again. You know, it's like
too bad.
But look, it's like what was the guy's name? Peter Frampton. You probably never heard of him. But anyway, he had these songs that were really popular, but he went out and did these new albums, would go out and do these things. He would never play his old songs because he wanted people to hear his new songs. But they didn't want to hear his new songs. They wanted to hear his old songs. So he had a really terrible career. And then later on, he started playing his old songs and all of a sudden his career came back. So don't forget, if someone really likes something, you know, give them that too, because that'll make them really happy. And it'll make you look good, because I'll say, you know what? Here's a person who's doing this for me, even though we know that she doesn't really want to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we do have those customers. And
yeah.
Oh, boy.
True enough. So what would you say now, you know, now that you're looking back to these young folks might listen that are maybe going to go to chef school or whatnot, or maybe they want to be a chef. They're watching these TV shows, man. I want to be a chef. What would you tell them?
Stop watching the TV shows and get into a kitchen.
Yeah, true enough.
Get into a real kitchen. Get into a kitchen that you're interested in the food, and stay there for a week or two and just kind of get a feel for what's going on. And don't say, hey, I like to cook for my family. I like to cook my friends. I like to throw dinner parties. That's not what this is about at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's about so many other things, and it's not about just being a chef. It's about being a firefighter, a babysitter, a psychologist, a peacemaker, an analyst. I mean, there's so many other things that you need to do to be a successful chef,
mm-hmm.
and you need to be able to just really, I don't know, I guess just really be open, and you really need to just grow personally.
Sure.
Constantly. It's just a never-ending thing.
Yeah.
And don't ever think that you're better than anybody else. I treat my dishwashers the same as I treat my cooks, as I treat my food runners, as everybody. I don't yell unless I have to. I don't treat people poorly. You know, I know there's that stigma out there, but I don't buy into that just because I'm
mm-hmm.
a chef. You know, and there are times that I do. I mean, and
you,
I do,
you don't
deserve it.
You don't sit there and tell your cooks like, look, make me a dish and bring it. Let me taste it. Oh, bring me a glass of wine too. You don't do that?
Oh, never.
I do that all the time.
No. Usually they'll make something for themselves, and they'll say, yes, you want half? And I'm like, yeah, I do. Are you kidding me? You know, one hand washes the other.
Yeah, true enough.
You gotta respect people. And I had one of my food runners tell me tonight, he's like, I'll run to the ends of the earth for you because you treat me with respect. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I appreciate that.
That is good. That's a good compliment from a frontline employee. So what? One more thing. If people are listening, anything you want them to know about Andrea J. Hindley? I like that.
Not
Andrea
really.
J. Hindley.
You know, I just work hard and keep going. I don't have a plan. I have no idea what's in store for me in the future. And I see, you know, every time I try and figure out my future and try and lay plans out, something else completely different happens.
Yeah.
So I just quit. I quit trying.
to plan, you're just gonna let it happen.
Yeah.
Like you're surfing.
Exactly.
There you go.
Ride the wave.
You're riding the wave. Well, look, it's been really nice talking to you. I think it's a real interesting story. People really like it. Thanks for talking to us about your Hell's Kitchen time too. Because you know, lots of times when people do the TV thing, they don't really want to talk about it because they like. You know, they like to keep that whole persona, but that was good, interesting information that you gave us and behind. So thank you. And I think people are going to really dig your interview. I did. So
thanks, Steph.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. Anyway, folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat. And again, you were listening tonight to Andrea J. Hindley, chef at Stokes A. Castle in Pennsylvania, finalist in Hell's Kitchen with everybody's favorite Gordon Ramsay, the real sweet and kind, tender chef that he is. And it was a great interview, folks. I hope you'll sound out. Let us know what you think. If you have any questions coming up, I just wanted to tell you that if you can take a minute and send me an email on our blog, which is chewfat.net. If you have any questions you would like to ask me, because I am going to actually interview myself coming up here. It's been a request, of course, probably from my mother, so you know that's one thing. You know, moms want you to talk, so go ahead and send in questions. We love you. Listen, chewfat.net, Seville Podcast, Chef Craig out.
It was always just the name of this song, and I guessed it. Well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record, and it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago, 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower, with her husband Ray and Facha the dog. And living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction, and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones. And rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie. I put it."